Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Federalism and Separation of Powers Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, June 5th, 2017, during a live Courthouse Steps Teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Teleforum conference call. This afternoon, we'll hear a Courthouse Steps decision teleforum on BNSF Railway Co. v. Tyrell, a decision handed down by the Supreme Court last week. My name is Laura Flint. I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us Karen Harned, Executive Director at the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Legal Center. I'll turn it over to Karen to get us started. After opening remarks, we will go to audience question and answer. Thank you for speaking with us, Karen. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Laura, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. So last week, the Supreme Court on May 30th issued its opinion in BNSF Railways versus Tyrell. And in that case, the Supreme Court was asked to define once again when a company has a substantial and continuous enough presence in a state that would provide for general jurisdiction for it to be sued there. The case concerned a claim that was filed in March 2011 by Robert Nelson. He was a North Dakota resident who brought a lawsuit under the Federal Employers Liability Act, and that's an act which allows railroad companies to be sued for on-the-job injuries. Nelson had sought damages for knee injuries he allegedly had sustained by BNSF when he was a fuel truck driver for that company. Then in May 2014, a representative for Brent Tyrell sued for damages he sustained while he worked at BNSF. Allegedly, Tyrell had been exposed to various carcinogenic chemicals that had caused him to develop kidney cancer and ultimately resulted in his death. So neither the complaint filed by Nelson or Tyrell, though, alleged that they were ever worked in or were injured in Montana. Moreover, BNSF was a Delaware corporation and had its principal business place of business in Texas. But despite all of those facts, the Montana Supreme Court heard the case. The case was brought there. It made its way up to the Montana Supreme Court. BNSF had moved to dismiss both the suits that Robert Nelson and Mr. Tyrell's estate had filed. Their motion was granted as to Nelson, but was denied as to Tyrell, and the Montana Supreme Court consolidated the two cases and ultimately found that Montana courts did have general personal jurisdiction over BNSF. So Montana Supreme Court, among other things, based their opinion on Montana rules of civil procedure and their long arm statute. And their rule of civil procedure and their state law allowed a non-resident defendant to be sued in Montana if they have, quote, substantial, end quote, or continuous and systematic contacts, and that such jurisdiction under Montana state law exists even if the cause of action is unrelated to the defendant's activities within Montana. The Montana court noted that BNSF has over 2,000 miles of railroad track and more than 2,000 employees in Montana. It has facilities there and owns real estates in Montana. They even noted that it had a Montana telephone listing and does direct advertising in Montana with Montana Media. The court found that even though BNSF alleges less than 10% of its revenues nationwide come from the business it does in Montana, that alone did not defeat jurisdiction. Importantly, there was a dissent filed in that case by Montana Supreme Court Justice McKinnon, who found that, among other things, Daimler AG versus Bauman, a 2014 Supreme Court decision, controlled, and under that test, BNSF is not at, quote, home, end quote, in Montana. So in Daimler, you may recall the Supreme Court held that the Due Process Clause of the Constitution prevents a defendant from being sued other than in his or her, quote, home, end quote, state. So for a corporation, that home state's going to be where the business is incorporated or has its principal place of business as a general matter. So the Montana Supreme Court did deal with Daimler because obviously BNSF would have raised that in their filings, but it distinguished the lawsuits that both Nelson and Tyrell had brought from the Supreme Court's holding in Daimler, stating that, among other things, Daimler did not involve the Federal Employers Liability Act claim or a railroad defendant. It was dealing with an out-of-state, actually a foreign corporation in Daimler, and not a railroad. So both those it found to be relevant. And so it also said that Daimler did not address personal jurisdiction under the Federal Employers Liability Act, since the court had long held FELA does not apply to torts occurring in foreign countries, even when all parties involved are U.S. citizens. So that was their reasoning. And so then on May 30th, the Supreme Court, in an 8-1 decision that was issued by Justice Ginsburg, and joined, interestingly, by our newest justice, Justice Gorsuch, who these arguments were heard in April after he had been confirmed. In their decision last week, the Supreme Court reaffirmed its holding in Daimler, and it found that, barring an exceptional case, companies are only going to be able to be sued under the Due Process Clause. The Due Process Clause will only permit companies to be sued and general jurisdiction to be had where the companies are either headquartered or incorporated or the plaintiff is injured. So before the Supreme Court, the plaintiffs had argued two key sentences in Section 56 of the Federal Employers Liability Act conferred personal jurisdiction on federal courts. Also granted jurisdiction to state courts. Justice Ginsburg dealt with both of these methodically, rejecting both of those claims, arguing that the first relevant sentence the plaintiffs relied on in that statute, in Section 56, concerned venue, and the second related to subject matter jurisdiction, neither related to personal jurisdiction. Specifically, she said the first relevant section of Section 56, which states, quote, an action may be brought in a district court of the United States, close quote, in places, quote, in which a defendant shall be doing business at the time of commencing such action, end quote. Ginsburg had noted that Congress generally uses the expression where suit may be brought to indicate the federal districts in which venue is proper. In contrast, Congress typically provides for exercise of Congress's typical mode of providing for exercise of personal jurisdiction has been to authorize service of process. And the Supreme Court had never held that sentence applied to personal jurisdiction. And the second relevant sentence in Section 56 provides that the, quote, the jurisdiction of the courts of the United States under this chapter shall be concurrent with that of the courts of several states, close quote. And Ginsburg noted that the Supreme Court had understood that sentence to provide for concurrent subject matter jurisdiction of state and federal courts over actions under the Federal Employers Liability Act. She reiterated, Justice Ginsburg did, what Justice McKinnon of the Montana Supreme Court had noted and recognized in her dissent in this case, where the phrase concurrent jurisdiction is a well-known term of art long employed by Congress and courts to refer to subject matter jurisdiction, again, not personal jurisdiction. And then at the end of her opinion, Justice Ginsburg again said and reiterated the holding that the court had made in Daimler. She said that the 14th Amendment's due process constraint described in Daimler applies to all state court assertions of general jurisdiction over non-resident defendants. It does not vary with the type of claim asserted or the business enterprise that is sued. and as the court had observed in Daimler, the general jurisdictional inquiry does not focus solely on the magnitude of the defendant's in-state contacts. It calls instead for an appraisal of a corporation's activities in their entirety. And she noted, or I guess requoted or quoted from Daimler, a corporation that operates in many places can scarcely be deemed at home in all of them. And that, and said in this case that BNSF didn't have sufficient their contacts in Montana were not sufficient to provide for personal jurisdiction there. So that was her decision. It was a very good one. And the one lone justice was Justice Sotomayor, who did agree that the Federal Employers Liability Act didn't confer personal jurisdiction over railroads on state courts. And she also agreed that the Montana Supreme Court was wrong when they concluded that the nature of the claim here, the federal employer liability claim against a railroad, answered the due process clause question regarding personal jurisdiction. But what she does disagree with is what the court decided in 2014 in Daimler. And, you know, her opinion is short, but it's, you know, pretty policy driven as to why she thought that was Daimler was a bad idea. She talked about International Shoe, which we all learned in law school, and talked about court said, you know, under International Shoe, in other words, courts were to ask whether the benefits a defendant attained in the forum state warranted the burdens associated with the personal jurisdiction. And she goes on to say, if only its analysis today reflected that directive. Instead, the majority opinion goes on to reaffirm the restrictive, quote unquote, at home test set out in Daimler, a test that I have explained has no home in our precedents and creates serious inequities. She thinks basically that under Daimler, large multi-state or multinational corporations that operate across many jurisdictions, you know, basically this is a windfall for them, that it's inconceivable such corporations will ever be subject to general jurisdiction in any location other than their principal place of business or incorporation. And went on to say, but it's individual plaintiffs harmed by the actions of a far-flung foreign corporation who will bear the brunt of the majority's approach and be forced to sue in distant jurisdictions with which they have no contacts or connection. And I just thought that was interesting, too, because, again, in this case, the plaintiffs didn't even live or work in Montana. So they were, you know, making a move for it when it came to choosing to sue in that court. And I would just note that, you know, there was a case, I guess, back in 1952 that Ginsburg reiterated or mentioned in her Supreme Court, in her opinion, majority opinion, on what would be that exceptional case where you have a corporation that has general jurisdiction, but they're not incorporated in the state. They don't have a principal place of business in the state, or the plaintiff didn't suffer an injury there. There was a case, Perkins versus Benguet Consul Mining in 52, where Ginsburg said that was such a case. In that case, Perkins was the company, I guess, and war had forced that company's owner to temporarily relocate from the Philippines to Ohio. And Ohio then became the center of the corporation's wartime activities. And so she said that would be an example of when it was appropriate for Perkins to have been sued in Ohio, even though it wasn't incorporated there. So with that is basically my summary, Laura, and I'm ready for questions.
Great. Let's go to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing a question yet. I'll ask one of my own. Why did they pick Montana?
Well, there was an interesting letter to the editor last week that was submitted by Tiger Joyce, who runs the American Tort Reform Association. I should note, we were on an amicus brief in this case, arguing for the result that we got here with the American Tort Reform Association. And interestingly, they picked Montana because it's what ATRA calls one of its judicial hellholes. At least that's what we think was the reason, because the state's highest court there, Montana's Supreme Court, is notorious for plaintiff-friendly rulings. And so, you know, that's another reason why this case is so important, like Daimler, and like one that's going to be coming down soon, Bristol-Myers Squibb, which concerns California decision and whether or not, you know, basically plaintiffs trying to foreign shop there. You know, all of these cases that the Supreme Court's been taking on these issues of who can sue and where they can sue and how they've been doing, I think, on balance, a decent job at the Supreme Court of stopping and shutting down some of the antics of the plaintiff's bar that has really, you know, it's more about where you can get the most cash versus, you know, really trying to, you know, do the right thing by their defendants. In my opinion, obviously, I'm pretty biased on this, but I think that's probably a good reason for why they did file in Montana.
Great. Let's go to our first audience question. Go ahead, caller. Looks like we might be having some technical difficulties. Are you on mute?
I am on mute. Thank you.
Oh,
sorry.
There you go.
Can you hear me now? Thanks. This is Lee Mickus out in Denver, and Karen, I very much appreciate your comments for this really significant case. I'm interested in your thoughts on the due process piece of it, and in particular, while the court spoke specifically to the general jurisdiction piece because that was what was in play in the case, they made a number of comments, or Justice Ginsburg made a number of comments about specific personal jurisdiction in passing, and in describing what would need to be held if those circumstances were to arise. And the way I read the court's comments, it actually seemed like they were tightening up or maybe giving a little bit more specificity toward what was going to be required for what they now termed case-linked jurisdiction. And it seems like they may be creating some opportunity for jurisdictional challenge in things like product liability cases where the injury doesn't happen within the state and maybe the product wasn't originally sold within the state. What do you think?
Yeah, I noticed that too. And I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic that your read on this is correct. Because again, it's just, I feel like, you know, just based on the members I represent small businesses all over the country, and quite frankly, they're the ones that are most likely to be sued for, you know, to get kind of the shakedown settlements from some of the more unscrupulous trial bar. And all of these, I do think the Supreme Court, just in watching them over the last several years, they seem to be getting the joke on this. And so I'm hopeful that you're right. And I'm hopeful that this will lead to some more tightening, despite, you know, Sotomayor's pleas there in her dissent. It was just her, which I also thought was fantastic. So, you know, only time will tell, but I'm hopeful that that is indeed the case and that there will be restrictions on who, when, and how you can sue, because it really has become a real big playing field for the plaintiffs bar out there, and they really need to be reined in. Again, this is just my opinion.
Thank you.
Let's go to the next question.
Hi, this is Gary Wheaton again up here in New Hampshire. I do not practice in this area, so bear with me. Just trying to get to the bottom line here. So I think Worldwide Volkswagen, very familiar with that case, and how minimum contacts, I guess, is the basis of my question. Mm-hmm. I think there was a magazine that was sued up in New Hampshire or Vermont because they were trying to get a longer statute of limitation. That's another case I vaguely remember. So the question is, do you think that this change, like, does it change any of that precedent as far as minimum contacts being another way to get, I guess, general jurisdiction over the client? So I know that these cases are limited in that the type of company that we're dealing with, you know, railroads and things like that. So, for example, if it's a magazine that distributes in the state or a gas station or something like that, is that minimum contact standard still going to be the case from precedent, or do you think the bottom line here is that they're tightening up on that?
Well, I mean, you know, that is a good point, because I actually got a question from a member after I sent out a note on this case. I mean, I think it's more when you've got, I think you're safest if, you're suing again where the company is either incorporated, or has their, principal place of business, like their headquarters, or the plaintiff is injured. And so maybe, you know, with that magazine case, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with it, but I would assume that the plaintiff was injured there. That was an issue that when I was talking to this member last week, the problem that this does not correct for him is the plaintiff that's alleging the injury, although not where he's incorporated, not in that state where he's incorporated and or where he has his principal place of business, the plaintiff was injured there. So sadly, I just don't think we're there yet on providing that kind of relief. But, you know, it's a small step forward as far as I'm concerned. And I'm also happy that they even took the case, quite frankly, because the Daimler case was just in 2014. And the fact that they really wanted to make sure the Supreme, you know, the Montana Supreme Court and the state courts all over the country knew we meant it, what we said in Daimler, I thought was a good thing. So I don't know if that answers your question, other than because I don't know the facts of that specific case. But, you know, if the plaintiff's where the plaintiff's injured, that's still going to be a tie that they can use, at least right now, I think, to bring a suit in that case, in their that state.
Okay, so let me follow up, because I just found the case. I think it's the Keaton versus Penthouse Magazine case, where, or Hustler Magazine or something like that. So it was a defamation case, I believe. And the only reason why they took it to New Hampshire was because they ran out of statute of limitation on it. So there was really no injury in that state.
So when was that case?
So it's the date here, 1984.
Yeah, so that would, no, so this would definitely overtake that, I would think.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Worldwide Volkswagen is still precedent. I mean, the dealer had no idea where the car was going to be used. The injury happened in, what, Oklahoma or something like that. Here it's not injury. Here it's defamation. I guess that's the injury. So, you know, the person, nobody had any contacts with New Hampshire at all. Right. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, take that back. The magazine had some limited distribution in the state. So that's.
But I don't think, I think now this would, I would like to think this would, that case would come out different now in light of a decision here. I honestly would like to think that, because Ginsburg was pretty clear. I mean, it wasn't like BNSF didn't have anything going on in Montana. They did have quite a bit going on there, but she still didn't think that was sufficient. And I thought, So, I would like to think that that magazine case would turn out different now in light of this decision.
Very interesting indeed, at least. So, excellent. Thank you very much.
Let's go to the next caller.
Oh, hello. This is Lewis Smith calling. It's more of a general comment. I just recently finished reading an article in the Harvard Journal. The April edition of it, which talks about an artificial being, John Marshall and the corporate personhood. It's a fascinating article, and it touches base on all of this corporate personhood and where states can sue and be sued, and where businesses can be sued and sue. And I just wanted to put that out for the general public that might find this article terribly interesting if you're really into this question.
And well, thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we're waiting for our next question, I'll make a brief announcement. Our next Teleform conference call is scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, June 6th. That call will be another Courthouse Steps Decision Teleforum, this one on Advocate Healthcare v. Stapleton, featuring Eric Baxter, Senior Counsel at the Beckett Fund. A reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming Teleform calls. You can consult the full schedule of our upcoming calls on the Federalist Society's website, fedsoc.org. Also available there are podcasts of previously recorded Teleform calls you may have missed. Make another call for questions. To ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing one, I'll ask another question. Can you talk a little bit more about the Bristol-Myers Squibb case that you mentioned in passing?
Yes, one second here. I've got to get my notes on that. Sorry. Hold on. It concerns, I think it's the name of the product is Plavix. I apologize. I had this and now I've lost it. So anyway, the issues concerning whether a plaintiff's claim that's arising out of or relating to a defendant's forum activities when there's no real link between the defendant's forum contacts and the plaintiff's claim, or in other words, for the plaintiff's claims could be exactly the same even if the defendant had no forum contacts. And the California court was pretty aggressive and not surprisingly, I guess I would say, claiming jurisdiction over claims by out-of-state litigants that were also against out-of-state defendants. So I would like to think that this case is going to signal another favorable decision in that one, but we shall see.
I'll make another final call for questions. To ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any more questions. Karen, do you have any final remarks?
I do not.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us on behalf of the Federalist Society. I want to thank Karen for the benefit of her valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.